Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Pixar in Review. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside It's Christmas Everywhere She Goes, Joey Noel.
Hello.
The master of the ones and twos, Mr. Kevin Coelho.
What's up, man?
And the best man in his room, Mr. Andy Cortez.
What's going on, everybody?
The best person in his room right now.
Of course, Tim usually hosts this show, but he has had a power outage at his place of living because attacks the power grid, and we're worried for him. I don't think he's winning this fight, Kevin. Last update, Tim was like, I think this is my last moment on Earth.
He was emotionally distraught the last time I spoke to him as well.
Yeah.
Tough. So I'm going to be taking us through Pixar in Review. Today, we are reviewing Soul. Of course, this episode of Interview is brought to you by our Patreon producers, who are amazing, the kind of funny Destiny 2 PC clan. We like you guys very much. Next week's Interview are Scream 3 and Scream 4, so make sure you stick around for that. And then following week is going to be a Venom rewatch, and then Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Also, an episode of Interview is brought to you by HBO Max, Rooster Teeth, and Rooster Teeth's Last Laugh Season 2, hosted by Jeff and Elise. So definitely go check all that stuff out. We'll tell you about that a little bit later. Right now, let's talk about Soul. A runtime of 1 hour and 40 minutes. Released December 25th, 2020. This is Pixar's 23rd film, directed by Pete Docter, an American animator, film director, screenwriter, producer, voice actor, and too many things here, Pete. I'm just going to say, just cut it off to the most important two things, okay? That's what I'm talking about here. You know what I mean? Anywhere like
trying to be a quality producer.
What's that?
Trying to be a quadruple threat, you know?
It's too much. It's too much. You're a director. And you're a voice actor. That's fine.
You just spilled the soda all over my desk. Hold, please.
Joey,
Is your keyboard functioning?
Do we need to put
I guess we'll find out.
The pause screen?
Joey, don't drop the forks in the cake, okay, Joe?
We'll ask her last.
Copy that. He is best known for directing the Pixar animated feature films Monsters, Inc., Up, and Inside Out, and as a key figure and collaborator at Pixar. The music was done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Trent Reznor.
Well, it says Rezno, so that's what I'm reading
Listen,
right here.
Listen, maybe I had to build Pixar Review for the first time ever today.
It's funny because I got to Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails, and I was like, huh, I didn't know there was another guy named Trent in Nine Inch Nails named Trent Rezno.
I just want to say it feels good to know that everyone takes this job as seriously as like I do, where it's like day of, Tim didn't have it built, and it's like, thank God, you know? Like, we're all pushing ourselves to the limit. And if something goes wrong, you know, it's the microchip thing, like where
we're walking
even
a grain
of salt,
here, Kevin.
Even
exactly.
A grain of salt or yeah. Grain of, what is it?
Sand? Rice?
Sand?
No, it's sand. Would salt. Destroy anything us completely.
Yeah. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails and John Batiste, I assume that's spelled correctly, who composed the jazz songs for the New York City portion of the film, which I very much liked. Budget of 150 plus million. Box office return of 119.3 million. Soul was originally scheduled for theatrical release in the United States on June 19th, 2020, but due to the COVID-19 pandemic, it was delayed to November 20th, 2020, replacing Disney's animations film Raya and the Last Dragon, whose release was delayed to March 5th, 2021. On October 8th, 2020, Disney announced the cancellation of the film's theatrical release, and it would premiere exclusively on Disney Plus on December 25th, 2020. Guess what day that is? December 25th, 2020. That is Joey Noel's birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, good birthday, Joey, coming up.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Any day can be your birthday if you just say it on Twitter.
What?
I said any day can be your birthday if you just say it on Twitter. One time I posted on Instagram, happy birthday, everyone, or happy birthday. And I just did this, and someone was like, happy birthday, Nick. I'm like, no, I was wishing you a happy birthday if it was
your
birthday.
That's the Tamar Hussein way. Yeah.
Exactly. Andy got it. Soul led the 93rd Academy Awards season with 3 nominations, including Best Sound. The film received 2 Oscars, Best Animated Picture and Best Original Score, which were also awards it received at the 78th Golden Globes Awards. Some fun facts. We always talk about the Bechdel test, which is a measure of representation of women in fiction. It asks whether a work features at least 2 women who talk to each other about something other than a man. The requirement that the 2 women must be named in some time is sometimes added as well. In this case, they are both named, and it does pass because there's a...
Terry.
What's that?
What is it, though?
Well, for one, I mean, the souls aren't necessarily gendered. Yeah. But also we have a scene where 22, who is referred to at one point, I believe, as a she, has a conversation with Connie out on the stoop about whether or not she should quit. And
it's also confusing because she's inhabiting a male body at that point.
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff going on. This is very meta. It's very, very meta. Yeah. Not much trivia here, but I'll read this because this is kind of funny. The production baby's part of the credits is retitled Recent U Seminar Graduates. Before the end logo rolls, it says, in addition to, that's funny, usual created by Pixar text, says, and in the homes at least 6 feet away from each other in the Bay Area, referencing the fact that the animators worked at home due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Then another fun piece of, I'll just say it here, but just remember this from when we get to the pizza scene. A broccoli pizza from Inside Out appears amongst the pizzas when Joe tries to show 22 the joys of life. And of course, 22, can anyone guess what 22 is significant for? We'll go on.
I feel
table.
Like it's cheating because I wrote this.
Yeah, Joe, you're not allowed to write.
You can't answer. You can't answer.
Yes. Andy, what do you think 22 means?
I think I have it. I think I have it.
First one to win gets the rest of this iced coffee.
So I don't wait for Andy. It's the genome, the DNA?
No, it is a reference to the 22 prior films that came before this. This being the 23rd
makes a lot
film
more sense.
In the Pixar universe.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying, right?
The 22 genomes.
I was going to say smart genomes, me, Kevin, I was going to say Emmett Smith from the Cowboys.
22 pairs.
Chromosomes.
Chromosomes. There's 22, right?
It might be.
I don't think there are. There's 23.
Is it 23? Is it 23?
Me and Andy have 24.
This is 23 and me. Yeah.
Oh well, Joey, I fucked that up. That was my fault.
Let's go around the table, Joey. Let's start with you.
Real
what
quick,
did
wait,
you think?
Sorry.
Oh, sure.
Real quick, let me just go in because like it's the thing you just said a minute ago. For whatever reason, when this movie ends and you get that like the little page that says like you know, all made babies. All over the Bay,
mm-hmm. yeah,
that really hit home. I don't know. Like I was watching it, I was like, wow, what a like nice little thing to encapsulate, you know, how the movie was made forever. And I don't know, it's just a weird thing that like hit me really hard at the end of it.
We got that also for Luca, I believe, right?
That sounds about right. That makes sense.
Yeah, we saw that pop up.
Let's talk about what we thought of Soul. Joey, what'd you think of Soul? Kick it off.
Why do you have to start with me on this one?
Andy, what'd you think of Soul? Kick it off.
No, it's too late. I'm starting.
Joey's got soda all over her.
It's fine. I only spilled nominally. Unpopularly, I don't really like this movie.
You're fucking crazy.
I know.
Joey fucking sucks. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, Joey.
Like, I understand that it's a good movie. There's just and this makes sense, especially coming from you two. There is a section of Pixar movies that I don't really care about, including Inside Out and WALL-E, that are like a little bit more existential and like ethereal in nature, and this falls in that category, and I don't find them particularly fun, which is why I don't really like them. What else was I gonna say? A lot of the like body swap humor stuff didn't really hit for me. It feels really long to me, and it feels like it's gonna end like 2 different times. I don't really like it. I think at the time when I first watched it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. But I also think it's because I had just watched Wonder Woman 1984 and I was like, this is a great palate cleanser from that. the like existential, what do you want to do with your life thing doesn't, like, what's your purpose doesn't really hit for me.
Yeah. Andy, what'd you think?
This movie's incredible. Holy shit. Like, I can't believe how this is not a kid's movie, like, at all. Like, I know we say that about a lot of Pixar movies, but this one is not a kids movie. And I think all the concepts and creativity that go into trying to personify what makes you, you, all of that shit is just so damn creative. And I enjoy the side characters, and Yeah, man, it's just incredible. I thought from front to back, I am invested in this story. I think Jamie Foxx is so damn good. He's such a great actor, and his line delivery is just always on point. And I'm glad the movie didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. When we got into the Freaky Friday territory, I was like, oh, no, don't let this be the main conflict. Like, I don't want this to be the main conflict.
At one point, Andy, did you think the cat was going to have to play piano?
No, but that's hilarious. That's fucking hilarious. But like Ratatouille, like get on his head and move his hands. But there was a moment that I thought they were going to tread into that territory, into the, in my opinion, lesser quality of a movie territory, when he finally gets back into his body and homegirl's like, you got the gig. And he's like, all right, awesome. Like, this is my chance. This is where I'm going to pop off. And I was like, oh no, 22 has his piano skills. I thought they were going to do that. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to go up on stage and be like, I don't know how to play piano. God damn it, 22. And I was like, please don't let the movie do this. But it stayed on track in the exact sort of way that I wanted it to go. And by the end of it, I'm a mess. Like, I think this movie just does such a great job of this movie kind of like, yeah, it'll make you feel like shit, you know. You will kind of feel like, am I really experiencing the world for what it really can be? Mm-hmm. And having all those flashbacks and seeing 22's wonderment and her watching the little girl play trombone and then her eating the pizza and her experiencing what life actually is all about. And I think all of that backed with that piano was just like, it's hitting on all levels right now. This movie's amazing. It's definitely going to be way up there for me by the end of it.
Kevin.
I am right there with Andy and super, super the opposite of Joey, who sucks.
No,
I'm joking. She knows.
But Joey, you suck. Yeah.
I'm going to spill this all over my camera and just log off.
Man, if your vote doesn't come in, it doesn't come in. Not big deal. But yeah, no, I love this movie. I think that it's incredible what Pixar, like, it's wild to me that they sat down and they're like, let's dive deep into the existential, like, ness of existing and purpose and what that means for us and how we can make a movie out of it. And like, I feel like they did such a good job nailing everything. I really liked that it kind of has the movie kind of has two feels to it, right? Like getting back to being alive and then getting back into his body and then doing something with that. I just think the casting is phenomenal. Everyone that is in this movie is great. And yeah, I mean, it grabs my attention from the very beginning and held on to it so, so well. Yeah.
And visually, the concept artist just popped the hell off. This
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The visuals are stunning. The way they make the other side, or I can't remember the name of it, but like all of that world look. And then there are several scenes where we see the musician. What was her name? Hold on.
Dorothea.
Dorothea. Yeah. Where she's like singing and like the shot of her. Like, it's not like that it looks realistic, but like, you can tell that like, they were like, this is the aesthetic we want. And then they fucking nailed it and made it look so good. Yeah, anyways. Yeah. I love this movie.
I'm kind of with Joey on this one. I wanted to like this movie a lot more than I did, but I think it kind of gets lost in the existential and forgets to be fun. I think it's stunningly animated. I think the voice cast is perfect and I think everyone does a great job. And I love the music in this, and I was all in. There's even a moment when I was writing the synopsis for this when he goes down and does his audition in the club, and he like does that thing where he like looks at the pictures on the walls. Like, I do that when I go to comedy clubs. You look at the pictures of the walls of all the greats that came before you and you think, oh, I want to be on the level where someone wants to hang my picture on this wall. And then of course he goes down and he descends into like the cool club that's had no windows and it's cramped and it's going to be, you know, in like 6 hours, they're just going to light up that stage. And I'm like, this movie is really speaking to me right now. And then he winds up in a cat. And I'm like, I don't like the body swap stuff. I don't like the Freaky Friday stuff. And the movie, I'm not even sure that I 100% agree with the movie's message, which I'm not even quite sure what the movie's message is supposed to be at the end. Like, I think it's supposed to be, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, like, I would love to see what you guys got out of this, but I think it's supposed to be, like, life isn't all about pursuing that one thing and trying, like, pursuing your passion. You have to kind of, like, take everything as it comes and, like, experience everything and, like, maybe not so, be so crazy hardcore about it. But I just, like, I don't know. There's always some part of me that's like, I don't know if I believe that. I think that, like, he does have to have a balance, and that's true. And I think he's been imbalanced so much that he's been so focused on this that he forgot that, you know, maybe he's spent more time with the kids. But I don't think, I mean, that environment with the kids didn't look like it was all that great either. So I was like, this guy doesn't really have a lot going on for him either way. But of course, it does remind me of the old Ferris Bueller adage of, like, you know, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to take a look every once in a while, I might just miss it. I get it. I don't know. It's so weird because Pixar lately has been on that weird run. And Kevin, I know that I forget what movie it was where you were, like, disagreeing with, like, the general statement of it. But
Incredibles.
Ratatouille.
Yeah. It was Incredibles 2 or
no,
1.
It was, oh, 1.
It was like, yeah, don't try, like, to be super. Yeah.
That's the message. That's the message.
But it's just interesting because every movie to come before this is always like, hey, try really, really hard and try to achieve the thing you want and you'll get it. And this is the opposite where it's like, don't try to do that. Just enjoy your life.
I disagree. I don't think the message is about trying to succeed in what you're doing. I think it's don't let the one thing you're pursuing get in the way of everything else. Don't have the blinders on, or else, like you just mentioned with the Ferris Bueller thing, like, you will miss life. And I think a lot of that can apply to having that grind mindset, and it's all about grind culture, and you're going after that thing, and I wake up and I do my work here, kind of funny, and I get on stream and I'm all about, like, and then when I'm off stream, it's like, all right, what's this next video I could post? Because I'm in constant pursuit of that thing.
Yeah.
And there are tons of times where I'm like, I got to go for a walk. I got to get the fuck out of here. I got to call my parents. I need to, like, it's so hard to do that, though, because when you are in pursuit, you do worry about, am I going to lose it? Am I going to fall off the trail? And it's like, you just got to take a second to relax and accept the world and enjoy the world for what it is. And I think I hear that a lot about parenthood, where it's like, it's going to be a pain in the ass when the babies are crying and it's 2 a.m, 4 a.m, and you're annoyed with it or whatever. It's like, love those moments because they're going to be gone. Next thing you're going to blink and they're going to be 17 years old, you know? And I just think that a lot of this movie is applied to that. And, like, don't get so caught up in the passion. Enjoy everything. Try to enjoy everything.
See, it's interesting to me, though, because, like, I got that out of this, but it didn't hit for me. And it didn't hit for me because it wasn't – his life was kind of a slog all the way through until he steps out of the door. And even then, you're like, you've worked your whole life. You finally got this one thing, and you didn't enjoy it. And I get it's because you don't have balance in your life. But, like, the moments where you were supposed to be finding that balance should be entertaining and fun, and they were just kind of stressful to me, like, watching this. Kevin.
I do think that he did enjoy it. I think the problem he was having then was that he, like, condemned 22 to, like, becoming a zombie ghost thing, and that's why he couldn't enjoy it. I think he was feeling guilt there. Because I think it is everything he wanted, but he felt like he had stolen, I mean, he had quite literally stolen the life from 22. And I think that's what his dilemma was. I think that this movie, its message is like, hey, just because something is like your spark, that doesn't mean it's what gives you purpose. That being said, I think it is reinforces, like, if you work hard, you can achieve your goals. Like, I think at the end of this, he doesn't stay a teacher. I think he very much goes off with the band.
Interesting. Because I think he stays a teacher. I think I read that moment differently, right? I know he was feeling like conflicted about the 22 stuff, but I read that moment as I worked my entire life, focused on this, pushed everything else and have nothing else in my life, and I achieved this moment and it's an empty feeling because I don't have balance in my life. I don't have anything else going for me. They mentioned Lisa, which is the girlfriend that he could have had. He doesn't really have a relationship with his mom. And then Dorothea, of course, tells that story of the fishes, right? Where she's like, you're looking for the ocean. She's like, well, you're in it. Like, this is it. This is life. And it's kind of, I mean, I understand what she's talking about, but it was also kind of a depressing analogy, right? Like that story is kind of like the kids.
And
like
that may be why I'm drawn to this.
Maybe. I don't know. I just felt like this movie was like very real and not as inspirational as I was hoping it would be for someone trying to achieve their goals. Like normally what you do is you'd start with the character that's like already achieved it and doesn't have perspective on his life and has to step back and find that balance. But in this one, he's like, I don't know. It's interesting. I had kind of an unfortunate reaction to this. It just didn't hit for me. And I didn't care for it that much. Andy.
I was going to mention real quick, like I think why I'm so surprised by this is that throughout all of these 23 movies that we've watched, 24, whatever.
This is the last one, by the way.
Yeah, this is the final one. With all of them that we've watched, if somebody does a scouting report and notices how I grade, it is always, well, if the movie doesn't have enough good, entertaining, fun dialogue with laughs, Andy normally won't rate it as high as the one that had a bunch of laughs and it was a fun time. And like, I agree with you, Nick. I don't think this movie is like super fun in a whole lot of ways. Like, I'm not getting great witty dialogue and laughing every 2 seconds because Billy Crystal's saying some funny shit or whatever. Like, this, I think it's just the powerful, the power of the story and the message are what is elevating this so high for me. When really I'm the dialogue guy. That's why Thor Ragnarok is my number one MCU movie. Like, that movie's funny as shit to me, and I can watch that nonstop. And it's why, well, WALL-E is my number one here. Well, no, Coco, WALL-E, whatever. But normally, the movies that are ranked higher for me are the ones that have a lot of fun factor to them. This doesn't really have a whole lot of that, but it's still so, it was still so well made and written. And I think the story is just so neatly carved out that I do rate it as high as I do.
Interesting.
I think so let's get to the vote.
Yeah, I think part of my issue with it too is like I feel like the soul thing is like it's not Inside Out, but it treads like slightly in that territory of like the souls and purpose and all of that kind of stuff. So it doesn't feel like a fresh Pixar take in terms of like world building the way that it does. It's like, oh, well, like what if monsters had, or of like, what's Monster World like? And like all of those things that I feel like are the things that to me are the things that like define a Pixar movie. I think anything that's like set on Earth that's like not as creative are also just not, I think it's just the fun factor. I think Andy nailed it, where it's just not fun.
And it's so interesting to me because while watching this, I'm like, this, there's so many parallels between this and Inside Out with the emotions and your personality and building out the person and the you that you are. Yeah. And what makes you, you know? And I think there are a lot of parallels between how they conceptually go from like pen to screen of, how are these worlds going to be presented and what are these concepts look like on screen? Mm-hmm. I just think this movie did a much better job of telling a better story, even though Inside Out, I thought, is a more fun movie, right? It's got all these silly characters, and this movie doesn't really have a whole lot of that. It really just feels like, I've mentioned it before, but Pixar does one for the fans and one for them. This feels like This was just a story they wanted to tell, and they had to make it as cute as possible to still be a Pixar movie. But goddamn, I just thought it was so strong throughout.
All right, Andy,
please tell us the story. Yeah, Nick, tell us the story.
Hey, we kick it off with the Disney castle, and of course, I love when they do this. I love when they redo the When You Wish Upon a Star. And this time they did it with my high school jazz band, and we were terrible. And that explains why Mr. Jackson hated me. We cut over, and Joe is conducting a middle school band.
Real quick, I legitimately didn't like this. Like, I think that they started too early, right? Because they also do the Pixar with the high school, right? The Pixar.
I don't remember. I don't recall.
I thought they did both, and I was like, that's too much. Also, it sounds terrible. So this is the moment where I was like, I get it, but like,
you know what though, Kevin, since you've never been in marching band, let me explain to you. Okay, bud. When you were in middle school, in your head, you sound amazing. But then you go back and watch old footage of yourself on VHS and you understand why your band director wanted to kill you. You really do. We were terrible. Joe conducts his middle school band and they suck, except for Connie, who absolutely shreds in the trombone. So naturally, as kids do, everyone makes fun of her. Joe tells Connie, he's like, listen, kids, Connie got lost in the music. And then he's like, this is what you want. And he tells a story of the first time his dad took him to see jazz ever. And he saw the same thing happen to a jazz pianist went off and they all got lost. And it was a wonderful thing. And it's what made him want to play music in the first place. And he goes, Connie understands what I'm talking about, right, Connie? And Connie goes, I'm 12.
He's one of the best characters in this entire movie.
Yeah. We need more Connie. Joe gets a knock on the door, and it's some good news, maybe. He finally has his full-time band director status with a salary and healthcare and all the trappings that come with having a full-time job and not being a working musician. He tells Joe tells his mom this, and she's, of course, super excited that her son finally has a steady job and can put all that gigging behind him, but Joe is obviously conflicted. His dream is to play music, not deal with shitty kids. Curly. Mr. G's old student calls him to offer him the job of a lifetime, which is to perform with Dorothea Williams. So, of course, Joe immediately, despite having heard his mother saying she was super proud of him, just throws all that aside and rushes over to the half note so that he can meet with Dorothea. And, man, this is the part I'm talking about. I'm all in on this movie right to this point. I'm like, if this is going to be about a struggling musician, like, dealing with, like, trying to make it later in life, I'm all about that, especially as they walk into the club. And I love how they animated it and just concepted all of this stuff. It's really
the cool. Lighting in this room is phenomenal. The visuals of her playing saxophone, just Kevin already mentioned it, but just that sort of slow zoom in on her with just everything is so expertly rendered. And then we see Joe go into the zone, and it's so badass. It is so cool.
It's great. She says, we're down to middle school teachers now, huh? We'll get up here, teach. We don't got all day. So they start playing. Joe's like, what are we going to play? And Dorothea's like, that's not how we roll right now. That's not what your audition's going to be. Your audition's going to be you follow me and you try to add to it. And of course, Joe doesn't skip a beat.
So real right there. You know?
He's able to do it. And then he takes off into an amazing solo and kind of goes into this cool, like, ethereal zone. And when he comes out, everyone's staring at him. And he's like, uh-oh, sorry about that. Did I go too far? And Dorothea says, Joe Gardner, where have you been?
Awesome.
Yeah, of course.
It's really cool to see the way that they, like, conceptualized what, like, getting into the zone and the flow is. Because, like, I feel like everybody has it in, like, a different way or, like, a different thing that brings it out with them. And it was cool to just to see, especially with the music and the lighting and stuff. I really like this
part. I was in the zone when I was insulting Finding Dory. I found myself. I had the purple and blue lights all around me, Nick, and I was just like talking shit.
Oh yeah, I saw it. If we can go, if you want to go back right now, insert that in here. You can actually see Andy the second Andy goes into the zone. Yeah,
it's a lot of VFX.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Come on, Roger, earn your keep. Joe gets the job of the quartet, and walks home elated, despite almost getting hit by a car and almost having bricks fall on and all this stuff. He calls to tell someone the good news. Of course, everything is going great until Joe fails to spot that open manhole cover in front of him and falls, and he dies. And this is when I was like, oh, this makes sense, because I saw the cover of this movie, and there's like a Casper the Friendly Ghost on it. So he's dead. Huh, that's a bummer. He meets up.
The way that they make these little soul things look fuzzy is like incredible to me. Like whatever, like how the texture of it is brilliant.
It's such nice rendering and like material work. And I absolutely adore that. I think only he and 22 have that pink to orange kind of lighting on the one rainbow side of their head. I think it's always like the right side, no matter what way they're facing. Yeah, I just love the way this is rendered. And I think, again, this is just sort of an extra step up from what Inside Out did with how they did their stuff. And you can tell there's a lot of parallels, and I bet you a lot of the same artists worked on both projects.
Joe meets up with a group of souls that are all headed toward that big, beautiful, bright light in the sky, and he freaks. He's like, I don't want to die on the day of my big break. So he starts running in the other direction, on top of in the mix of countless other life forms that, as they head toward that big bug zapper in the sky, get sort of zapped out. And I think it's so cool how they animated it as they zap out. Andy, did you catch that they kind of like, they dissolve into the primary colors?
Oh, no, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, if you go back and watch it as they zap, like a chromatic aberration thing happens.
Oh, that's cool.
And it goes red, white, red, green, and blue. It's cool.
That's really
kind of a fun little touch they did that. Of course, he starts running away. And as he does, he kind of jumps off the bridge and like rips through and then goes through this weird kind of purgatory and then lands in the place with all the new souls. And then one bites him. One of the Jerrys comes over to settle everyone down. I think this is played by Alice Braga, who we all know, of course, from Predators. Love that movie.
Oh, right. Wow.
And then she was in something else recently that we watched. I can't remember what it was.
Suicide Squad?
No. Yeah, it was Suicide Squad. That's right. The new Suicide, the James Gunn one. Good call. Good pull. Mm. She was the leader of the resistance on the island. Mm. She comes over and says, and settles everything down. And she gives him he's like, am I in heaven or am I in H-E double hockey sticks? And then one of the kids is like, hell, we can spell wrong. And then she tells him everything's great. Everything's going to be fine. You're in the Great Before, or as they call it now, the U Seminar, which has been rebranded. Joe's body is sort of in a holding pattern down below. We see that back up on the road to the afterlife. Two workers, Terry, I think, is one of the workers, notices that the count is off, and she's counting with like an abacus, and she's like, I don't know what's going on here. I gotta figure that out.
I really like that actor too. I think her name is, I have it here, Rachel House.
Yeah,
she's in
Thor
Ragnarok. Yeah, she's the, like, she's one of the first man. Yeah, the.
He's like right-hand man from Jeff Goldblum, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah.
She's also the cop in The Hunt for Wilder People.
Phenomenal. Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I love all of the line delivery. Yeah, very, very good. Very funny.
Back down the U-Seminar, Jerry sorts souls into personalities and then shows Joe the Earth portal. So he beelines right for that and jumps in. But it's time after time after time. He keeps trying and nothing doing. He can't get there because he doesn't have his card. We're going to learn that later. Jerry tells Joe he always goes back to the afterlife, but he chooses. He's like, you got to be a mentor now. He's like, what's a mentor? Like, well, let's go find out. And then the accountant, Terry, comes and tells Jerry that the count is off and then heads into the file room to find her missing soul. Joe watches a presentation on how to be a mentor, and we learn about a missing spot on the soul's personality cards. It's the spark spot. And once they find their spark, that'll give them, quote unquote, a purpose in life, and they can go live, which will be interesting. And a lot of this stuff was, this is where the movie sort of starts to lose me, because we're sitting in a lot of these things and getting a lot of exposition scene after scene after scene after scene. And I'm like, all right, I'm following all this. I think it's very heady, and I think it's very sort of conceptual, and that's cool, but I'm kind of like, I want something else to happen here, right? I don't know. And we're in these scenes for quite a while. Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of the difference. My expectation for this film was kind of coming in and finding in the traditional Pixar, like, we're going to have some fun and games in the section here. And this is definitely different. And I don't think that's necessarily negative or bad. I think it's just what I expected and what I got were two different things.
Yeah. So I like these sections because they're getting such complex, and there's like a bunch of throwaway lines that, like, when the first Jerry introduces herself, she like explains that she's a like multidimensional being that like is just dumbing herself down because we've got silly human brains and we don't understand it. And there's a bunch of little things like that that they say that are like so cool, and like there's a lot of like really heady stuff. I like that. Like I like them diving it in, and like when it ended too, there was kind of like I was still thinking about the way they had, like, you know, turned all that stuff into something simple that we could digest in like a 20-second video.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Joe gets the bright idea that, hey, all I need is one of these pass cards and I can make it back to Earth, so I'll steal one. But unfortunately, he gets called up to be a mentor under the name of Bjorn Borgensen, who used to be a therapist. He gets matched with soul number 22. And I like, by the way, that the soul that got picked before him was soul number 175,700,000,000, whatever, and she's 22. I love they don't call attention to it. Like, she's been denying going to Earth for a very, very, very long time.
She'll mention it several times that she's been here for thousands of years.
Yeah. Of course, 22 is a handful. She's like, I'm gonna wish you never died. Most people wish that, is what he says. Then they get sent to Bjorn's memory banks, and 22 tells Joe the score. She's like, Joe tells her the truth about himself. He asks her if there's any way to show a different life, and then shows her his real life, which includes him when he was like cool hip-hop band back in high school, and then the memory of the first time, of course, he fell in love with jazz with his dad when they went to the same club, which I think is the Half Note, which is why I think that's has a specific importance to him.
Yeah.
He says the tune is just an excuse to bring out the you. And then Joe sees all of, as we keep going, she's like, what are all these? And he sees all of his past rejections that led him to being a middle school band director. And his life seems kind of lonely. He says, my life was meaningless. He sees himself on the hospital bed in a coma. He's like, I gotta get back to it. He demands 22's badge, but no matter what she tries to do, she cannot get rid of it, unless, of course, it becomes an Earth patch pass. And in order to do that, just to fill in that last little square, and so they strike up a deal. What if I help you make it an Earth pass? Will you give it to me then? And she says, I would get to skip life altogether forever. Deal. So with a deal struck, they go to the. He tries to give her the spark of music, but she doesn't like music sounds. Feels like a little too much. They head over to the Hall of Everything, and 22 tells him the reason she sounds like Tina Fey is because the whole place is hypothetical. She only uses her voice because it's annoys most people. And he's like, "Oh, it's working. It works very well."
I also, as I'm thinking about this, I don't think I love Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, like their comedic timing in general, which is maybe why I don't really care for this or Inside Out.
I always
pair the two of them together on most projects and stuff. I don't know.
I'm
trying to figure out why I don't like this because I want to like these.
I'm kind of the mind of like, I mean, first off, I'm rewatching 30 Rock right now. I love Tina Fey and I love Amy Poehler. And I do, I mean,
or maybe I just Tina like Fey's them comedy. Not as the main character.
I just think it's these two characters don't have a lot of redeemable qualities to them. And so that's why it's difficult for me to enjoy this on the level of a Pixar movie. This is more like an indie film that's trying to be esoteric and succeeding wonderfully. But it's one of those films that you like walk out of the theater and you're like, that was a really good film. And it was a really good examination of what it means to have purpose in life or what it means to just be alive in general. And I never want to watch it again. Kind of, to me, at least. But I digress. Kevin's just shaking his head like, I'm not helping you on this one, Nick.
Yeah, no, I mean, I loved it. I loved so much of it. But again,
but it feels like an indie film.
I really like Tina Fey. I think she's great. Nick hates her for whatever reason. That's weird.
I love Tina Fey. Have you watched 30 Rock all the way through twice?
No, I got to like season 5, I think. Maybe four.
Andy, pull his Tina Fey card, please.
Kevin was saying he only got to season 4. He's like, not enough Tina Fey is what he told me.
Mm-hmm. She's in every scene. I'm joking.
Also love Baby Mama? That seems like a Nick movie.
God, that seems like a Nick movie.
Joey, do you even have to ask that question?
I hate that you really don't.
Do you even have to ask that question? That movie is light years ahead of its time. Light years. We get a fun scene here where they discover that in the ethereal realm, they can't taste or smell or touch. And when she tries to eat a piece of pizza, it just poops it right back out. Which I was like, oh, that's pretty clever. But guess what? It's going to come back a little later. And we get a montage of all the jobs 22 could potentially do on Earth, which includes a firefighter job where she's like, he's like, okay, now you got to put out the fire. She's like, I kind of want to just let it burn.
I get that.
And you're like, oh, you're a psychopath. That's fantastic. She's like, listen, I've been here way too long. I've never seen anything that makes me want to live until I saw how pathetic your life was and still you want to go back. So she's kind of inspired by the fact that he keeps trying no matter what.
Loser.
They get caught by one of the juries. She's like, no, we're going to try one more time to go breakdancing. And then they run off. And then she shows him her hiding place. They head to that special little pizza. I guess it's a sink she goes in. And it's her favorite place. What's that?
It's like underneath the sink. Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, she goes into the thing and then underneath the sink. And then that's when they go to the zone. And I think this is some of the best comedy here because she's like, yeah, I like to mess with people. One of which is like, I keep messing with this team. And it cuts over into the New York Knicks. and this is the zone, right? This is a cool concept. But then we see a bunch of people that were previously in the zone that have now become lost souls because they just can't let go of their anxieties and obsessions, leaving them lost and disconnected from life. One of them just keeps saying, make a trade, make a trade, make a trade, make a trade. But we don't know what he's saying yet until a little bit later. And then we meet Moonwind, who flies out on a magical hippie boat and saves one of the lost souls. And he draws a little circle in the ground and kind of reconnects him with a guy that's working at a hedge fund. And then the guy immediately quits. He's like, this is shit. I want to live.
I love the dramaticness in his quitting.
Yep. That's how I've always imagined we're going to quit this job.
I've thought about it a lot, Nick. I've thought about it a lot.
We're just going to stand on that on Tim's desk and just pee a circle on his keyboard. Just like now, and then I'm like, Kevin's gone. Now who's going to order you another keyboard from Amazon, Tim?
Did you that monitor's that? Too big though to do that same thing though. To like try to just swipe it off the table.
It'd be really tough. You pull it tricep muscle. of course, they help that guy out, and they say, poor fellow. Some people just can't let go. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Looks like another hedge fund manager. That was a fun one. They draw a circle. Sorry, I'm getting lost here. All of the mystics here are all people on Earth who have mastered the art of meditation. And they go, I love this. This got me. this got a laugh out of me, right? Because they go around the corner and one of them's like, I'm this, I'm that. One of the women says, I'm a student at Berkeley or whatever. And then they get to Moonwind and they just show him and he's one of the sign twirlers on the corner of like 14th and whatever.
In the zone.
In the zone, yeah.
Oh, I know that, which is great. And then they head. He's like, listen, I got to be reconnected with my body. He goes, cool, we got to head to a thin spot. And I think I can do this, but it's going to take you a while. And he's like, I got lost one time for a long time. And he's like, well, how did you get lost? He goes, I was lost because of tantric, he says. Which, Kevin, if I'm not mistaken, is tantric sex.
Yeah.
Which means your orgasm for hours.
I thought he said Tetris.
He said Tetris.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard
Tetris. Yeah, no. That's what I heard. And I asked Paul. I was like, what the fuck does this man just say? And she was like, Tetris. And I was like, oh, I get that.
Okay.
That's why we watch the subtitles, everybody.
This is right when I turn the subtitles on, apparently.
God, that's so funny.
22 watches as Joe, they go to the fin spot, draw the line. 22 watches as Joe tries to focus on where his body is located and sees New York, hears a heartbeat monitor, and smells hand sanitizer, and he realizes I'm in the hospital and there's a therapy cat on my lap. He gets very, very excited, and despite Moonwind being like, stop, we got to do this the right way, he ends up dragging 22 with him and jumps into the hole. Only when he wakes up, he's not in his body. He's in the cat's body. Bum, bum, bum.
Twisty. So twisty.
And before we go on, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break to tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by HBO Max. If you're here, you probably love video games, but sometimes we have to face the cold, hard truth. We can't game all the time. Sometimes we got to kick back and watch some movies and some TV too. So it's a good thing HBO Max is here to save the day with all of your favorite DC content. HBO Max has an expansive superhero collection to feed your fandom. Greg Miller is stoked, of course. They've got Wonder Woman. They got Justice League, Stargirl, Batwoman, HBO Shazam, Suicide Squad. The list goes on, of course. Plus, the streaming platform lets you download your favorite titles and take them with you on the go. All the bingeable collections handpicked by humans, not robots. Personally, I've been enjoying a whole bunch of different things over on HBO. I love all the day and date releases. We know we got The Matrix now coming out in December. That's really exciting to look forward to. We got Malignant. I'm about to watch that this weekend. Check out some of the best superhero content and so much more only on HBO Max. Get streaming today by going to hbom.ax/kindafunnydc. That's hbom.ax/kindafunnydc. Next up, shout out to Rooster Teeth's Last Laugh Season 2. I was a huge fan of Season 1, mainly because my boy Alfredo was in it, but Season 2, can't wait for it. Here's the whole pitch for it. Do not laugh. It's part game show, part social experiment, 100% evil laugh challenge, spectacular. Last Laugh returns for a second season with 12 contestants gathered for 6 hours to see who literally laughs last. If they laugh, smile, or smirk, they're eliminated and prevented from dethroning Season 1 champion, the homie, Blaine Gibson. The hosts of the show, Jeff Ramsey and Elise Willem. So that's super awesome. They have a new collection of surprises, but will they be enough to break the contestants? We'll have to find out. Last Laugh Season 2 debuts September 9th on Rooster Teeth, but you can catch up on all of Season 1 right now.
Okay. And at this point, I'm like, this is a really long walk to get Joe and this cat. That's the first thing I thought. I was like, we're in minute like 40 of this movie, and Joe's just in the cat's body. Man, Pixar is playing a little fast and loose with the traditional classic Coke storytelling beats of a screenplay. I don't hate it. I'm excited to see Jamie Foxx as a big tubby cat, but we'll see what happens.
Just love the cat's like character, like how they animated and drew the cat. I think it's very funny. Just so, mm-hmm. so much expression.
Well, I mean, the animation in this in general is like top notch. But mm-hmm. I like this scene too, because so of course they decide they have to go find Moonwind, and Joe looks down at the ground and it's like what, a 3-foot drop, and he's like, I can do this, and then just lands on a smushy face. Hilarious. Kevin, is that what cats really do sometimes? They just eat mm-hmm. it. They just
yeah. it. Yeah. You've never seen a cat do that in real life? It's great.
I don't have a cat. They terrify me.
I used to play fetch with Tom, and he would go run and just totally boof and just slide into a door, slamming it full speed. Idiot. It was great.
Idiot cat. I do like how they are playing with the expectation right here as well. Because, again, I mentioned it earlier, but I think that this is going to be all Freaky Friday. And the whole point of the movie is just to get out of the body, get back into your jazz form, play the gig and movie over. And I'm like, I'm not really feeling this. So I do like that. he essentially gets out of the body a little after the halfway point, I feel, because the rest of it is about, okay, 22, like, we need to, you have my purpose. You're like, you're trying to stay inside of my body, and I need to get back into my body. And then finding out what the actual sort of thing was, it kind of reminds me at the end of Onward, where you're waiting to see the dad the whole time. And really, the story is just about, no, let your older brother talk to the dad. You already sort of had that father figure in your life. And I do like how we eventually get there, where it's like, yeah, he played the gig, but this is never what it was really about. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I do think there's also a sense if, like, the whole Freaky Friday stuff is also very much about 22 learning, like, experiencing life and learning, like, developing a passion for it, or understanding that, like, things, you know, they don't necessarily, like, all the things that he explained or that has been explained to her are way more complex when you live them. And
yeah,
I love that journey, that 22, like, meeting people and talking to them, developing the relationship, even that leaf falling on her hand. Like, what a beautiful scene that is.
Although drinking the Slurpee on the subway, though, like, you gotta be careful. Like, at this point, I'm like, she's gonna get tetanus after, like, poking a barbed wire or something. Like, something's gonna go real wrong here.
Of course, they escape from the hospital, but 22, once they get outside, is quickly overwhelmed by the sights and sounds of the Big Apple, and she stops in the middle of the street. So Joe's like, you can't just stop in the middle of the street. You're going to get hit or whatever. And he goes to bat her, but he scratches her, and she runs off and then ends up hiding in a stoop somewhere. When he catches up to her, he finds her, and she's very, very hungry. So Joe introduces her to life's biggest pleasure, New York-style pizza. Mm. And she eats it, and she just loves it. And then it goes, strange, I don't feel angry anymore, which I thought was a funny joke.
I've been there a bunch of times.
We've all been there, my friend. They have a quick conversation that finally teaches me how to pronounce Yiro, and head over to the Moonwind to find him spinning a sign. And let me tell you guys right now, if you think that him continuing to spin the sign and dance a little bit as he's talking to them made me laugh out loud, you would be 100% right. They go over and he's like, listen, we gotta wait for one of those thin spots. We'll get you back in there. The thin spot's not gonna happen until 6:30, so I'll meet you at the half note at 6:30. Back up in the ethereal world, Terry continues to search for Joel's lost soul. Back down on Earth, Joel jumps into a cab, but before he does, who should get out of that cab? Dorothea Williams. And she sees him. She's like, this guy is in a dirty hospital gown and I just hired him. He's fired.
This gave me so much anxiety.
Oh yeah. I mean yeah.
It's just, I didn't expect for them to go this route. And as soon as it happens, it's like, oh my God, there's existential dread. Like, also when he actually gets the haircut.
The cat.
Oh, it's just like, what do you, like, get your shit together, my guy.
Yeah,
it's your chance.
It's hard to not put yourself in those positions and wonder what would you do in that moment and how. As soon as Joe is put in the cat, I'm like, oh, I would have fucking found a way to kill myself because there's no way I'm going to live as a cat. Like, that just seems like the end of a Black Mirror episode that fucking sucks, you know?
This is why we have all those podcast topics about how would you convince somebody that you got stuck in front of those bots?
Oh, that's true.
Also, Andy, like, there was a probable solution. Like, go to the weird psychic guy, Moondance, or whatever his name is, and sort it out. You go straight to being like, well, game over. Got to finish the job.
And he just immediately realizes it and is like, cool. Goes over the window.
It's over.
I'll tell you what, though. You're not thinking this through, though, Andy. Think about how many banks you could rob and get away with. Who the hell's going to convict a cat?
That's so true. You don't go to cat jail. Yeah.
We put you in jail. You squeeze right between the bars.
But is it worth enjoying the money?
I mean, you'd have to figure out a way to get it all on your phone with one button that your paw can push.
What would you just buy? Just like a shit ton of like catnip?
Meow mix, yeah. A catnip, meow mix, yeah.
You know what I would get? I would figure out a way to convince Kevin, like actual Kevin, that like, hey, I'm a cat and I'm Andy. Can you find a way? First off, I've robbed a bank, have billions in funds. Yeah. Can I take the extra bedroom? Joey, I might have to kick you out. I don't know what the situation is. But Kevin, could you build the cool kind of like
wall
park for me to just run around and do all the cool stunts? Yeah, I love
Andy,
that stuff.
All I need to do is come to me as a cat. And this, for anyone in the chat that's watching, that's put themselves in this predicament, stuck in a cat body, and they want me to help, come over to me as a cat and meow Iron Man to me. Then I'll know it's you. Or an
wait, now you want that song, or do you want the theme from Iron Man?
Now he, meow, 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 meow,
meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow.
Then I'll know, Andy. Then I'll know.
Copy that. They head back to Joe's apartment, and it's just a great part where he hits the sunlight and immediately gets sleepy and lays down. He's just like,
I've been that cat so many times.
And then Curly calls him and tells him that Dorothea, sorry, bud, gave the gig to someone else, but Curly wants him to show up at the club looking like $1 million, and he'll do everything he can to get that gig back. Then Connie comes over for her lesson, and Joe's like, oh, crap, tell her we're not available. But she's like, you know what? I don't even want a lesson. I quit. Jazz is pointless. In fact, all of school is a waste of time. 22 is like, I totally understand, and I'm vibing with you right now. I think life is a waste of time. So she goes out to talk to her. And then tells Connie she's totally right for quitting. But of course, Connie's not really looking to quit. She just wants a little bit of validation in her life from her teacher. She plays 22 a solo. She's been practicing at 22. It was like wowed by it and tells her she really loves it. And then, so she goes, so maybe I better stick with it. And then 22 is like, yeah, I guess that was amazing. First time experiencing music. Connie came here to quit, but she didn't. I need to know why is what she says. And then, Joe says, because she loves to play. Maybe trombone is her spark. And then 22 is like, I'm starting to get this whole life thing. She agrees to help Joe, but she wants to find a few things out along the way, since not everything seems quite so terrible on Earth anymore. Up in the accounting department, Terry finally finds Joe's file and tells Jerry's he's back on Earth, which is not good. She's going to go back down there and get him, and then the Jerry's warn her she cannot be seen by anyone or it'll be a disaster. Joe tries to line up 22's hair and ends up with a big old mess, just one streak down it. So they have to head over to Dee's, who immediately realizes it's an emergency and kicks his person out of the chair. And this is a cool little scene here. I like this scene a lot.
I agree.
And I think this is kind of the point of this is the pivotal point of the movie for me. And I'm glad this scene came together because 22 tells Joe about his, or 22 tells them about his gig with Dorothea, and Paul, one of the other patrons, poo-poos it. He says, Joe's Mr. Close, but no cigar. And then 22 tells everyone about her life being a theoretical construct and a hypothetical way station between life and death. And soon the entire shop is riveted by her words. And another thing they say, you're born to do something, but how do you figure out what that thing is? What if you pick the wrong thing? Then you're stuck. But then Deez tells 22 the reality of life. He says, you know, I wanted to be a veterinarian back in the day, but my daughter got sick. And then I went to barber school because it was cheaper for me in a better way that I could provide for her in a more immediate fashion. And then 22 tells him, oh, it must suck to be unhappy. And he's like, no, I'm not unhappy. I'm happy as a clam. And then Paul criticizes him again, and 22 gets it. She's like, oh, he's just criticizing me to cover up the pain of his own failed dreams. And Paul just is this is the worst day of my life.
Do you guys know who Paul is?
I do. No.
Joey does.
David Diggs.
There it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
On the way out, Deez tells them it's nice to finally talk about something else other than jazz. And he goes, how come we don't? And then, of course, 22 asks, how come we only ever talk about jazz? He goes, because that's all you ever want to talk about. You never ask about my life. And you're like, oh, Joe is kind of a one-track.
Great. Right, so good.
Let's see. Terry sneaks around and finally spots Joe. She traps Joe in a void, but it's actually Paul who is terrified. And then she says, don't stop eating these processed foods. And Paul's just like, this day, man, this cannot get any worse. And so probably is traumatized forever.
I do want to point out about how really cool and creative it is seeing Terry maneuver through the world and go from, like, it's always taking the shape of something. And if the bricks are, you know, patterned in a certain way, that's how they're going to zip through the little, it just looks really awesome. I love the way the artist did all that. Yeah.
That was cool too.
But I do wonder, how does this void back to wherever they're going, how does that look to human eyes?
I doubt that.
Does it look like anything?
No, I don't think. I think maybe the body just collapses and it's a mental thing. You know?
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I feel
it. Because, I mean, if we think about it later, Joe gets in the void. Well, I guess 22. Yeah, 22 and cat. They go in there and they just collapsed on the ground.
Got it. Okay. Because it just looked like a big wall to the galaxy. Like, it just looked so funny looking.
I think it's cool. That's like they kind of go outline-y first, which is cool. Joe asks 22 how she knew how to talk to the people in the barbershop. She says, I was just being myself. I was just jazzing. And he's like, I don't, that's not what jazz means. And then 22 is getting sort of a thirst for life at this point and splits her pants. And he's like, damn it, this is my one and only suit. And I have to show up looking good. And the only person who can fix this is my mom. So we got to head over there. And
then it's so hard not to smile here. It's so hard to not see 22 getting on that little like exhaust grate or whatever on the street.
I love the mirror thing that she does with like the
story. Yeah. But I just love like seeing her laying there and then just kind of like having fun. And then you kind of see in Joe, the cat being like, oh shit. Yeah. You're having fun there. Yeah. Go for it. Keep doing that shit or whatever. And eventually the pants split. And that's what causes the next sort of, that's where we have to go see mama or whatever. I love the sequence.
The pants splitting was too real for me. You know what I mean? Like, it really took me out of that moment because it was such a good setup. And then they split, and it reminds me of my short split one time. And it was like, damn it, I kept those shorts for too long. But that's what happens when you only have one pair of something.
You know, Nick, when we do rank these movies, I think a lot of them hit us very personally in certain ways. And now we know why Kevin loves this movie. He relates to this so hard. Yeah.
Let's see. Joe tells 22 they have to make up some sort of story because mom thinks he's like, mom's not going to get it. And she's like, oh, mom thinks you're a failure. And he's like, damn, that was harsh. And then 22, they take the subway. 22 is taken by a subway musician while Joe contemplates his failures. Then they get on the subway train and it's horrible. But I think one of the patrons here is voiced by John Ratzenberger. If I'm not, really?
I didn't catch it. Damn it.
I think the guy that was like, hey, watch your step or whatever. I think that was
Ratzenberger watch. I didn't notice it.
Exactly. Mm. You better watch it.
Yeah, I look at the IMDb. Ass. You're right, Nick.
Damn.
On the subway.
We also get that fun comedic beat here where he's like, where did you get that Slurpee? She's like, oh, underneath the seat. It's already half full.
No good.
Then they go over to mom's tailor shop and immediately, I love this, by the way. He's like, don't tell my mom what's going on. She can't know. And when they walk in, he just kind of hears something and he's like, she knows.
Well, her friends congratulate him.
Oh, right. He's like, that's right.
It's just like, God damn it. All right.
Yeah. Let's see. Mom and mom.
He kisses the friend in the mouth.
Just makes out.
She's like, let him finish.
And mom does not hold back about this gig. 22, of course, accidentally repeats what Joe is saying to his mom, that she never understood his life, and they get into it. He says, I finally land the gig of my life, and you're upset. Dad can pursue his dreams, and I can't. And then she kind of throws it back at him. She's like, listen, your father had me and this shop, which paid for most of his life, and you don't have either of those things. So what's going to happen when I'm gone? Who's going to pay for all these things? You don't have healthcare, you don't have these things. Of course, she's just worried for him. And he goes, listen, I'm afraid that if I die today, then my life would have amounted to nothing. And then his mom finally gets it. And she's like, well, then you're going to have to put this on.
Maybe we should have universal health care so he doesn't have to worry about that, you know?
Be dope, Joey. I mean, it's a good call.
It's
Nick, don't argue with this.
No, I agree that universal health care is a thing. But I just think this is where it starts getting like, I don't know. It's very interesting. Obviously, the Joe character is very, very flawed. But at the same time, I'm like, your dream is to be a gigging musician at the same nightclub. And I guess the club goes until maybe 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, but can't you just go to school the next day? And like,
I don't think that's his dream. Both? I think his dream is to be on the road being like, and I think again, I get the read that he gets that dream at the end of it. I don't think he stays because he wins his mom over. This whole conversation is him, what felt like him standing up to his mom for the first time, and just being like, no, I should be allowed to have my dreams too. And you know, hell with the consequences. I thought this was a powerful conversation.
Yeah, but then the mom kind of like is like, cool, I get it now, and I'm on your side. And you're like, I don't know, it's just there's a weird nebulousness of this conversation that didn't really sit right with me. Because again, as a dumb audience member, I'm like, all right, so she's all for him now, going for this thing. So, and she's the one that's basically been the voice of opposition, i.e., kind of getting across the theme, right? Which is that you should have a balanced life, you should have healthcare and be able to do this other thing. I don't know. It was a weird moment where she just kind of turns on a dime for him and is like, cool, we're all in on you, and then gives him the dad suit, which is really, really cool. But then they go to his show later, and then they're like, you did a great job. And I'm like, okay, well, is your mom like just totally on your side now? She's not worried about those other things. There's still an issue, right? Where she's like still worried about you taking care of yourself when she dies.
I got the sense that like this whole conversation is him being like, hey, I'm aware of that. I just, in spite of that, like that line that he says where he's like, if I like can't afford eating because I want to do this, then I'll stop eating.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like he's like, hey, I'm going to take this on no matter what cost it has. And yeah. She understands and like grows to respect him. And it's just like, all right, like I'm down now.
The issue
now
I have
you.
With that is, and sorry to cut you off. Continue.
No, that's it. That's I was okay. there.
The issue I have with that is Joe's not 16. Joe's not 20. Joe's like,
right. He's
got
adult.
Gray hair, right? He's
yeah,
probably in his late 30s, early 40s. So at this, they would have come to this conclusion a long time ago, right? Like, this is not news to his mother.
Well,
so the fact
I
that she just
so.
Immediately is like, oh, I finally understand what you're talking about. Like,
I knew it.
And I've been with Joe for
well, but
30
that's
minutes
thing.
Or 40 minutes.
We just saw how Joe handles talking to his mom about this sort of stuff. Like he was ready to be like, hey, we can't tell her anything. We have to hide everything. We're going to have to lie about what's going on with pants. And like, it was in that moment that he decides, like, I need to be honest about my pursuits. And what
yeah,
I want from the world.
And I totally get that. But my two criticisms of it are, duh, we know, Joe. Like, your mom's not an idiot. She understands what you're willing to sacrifice for this. She's telling you that you're wrong. Like, you're doing it the wrong way. And you're going to wind up, like, you know, you're going to get sick. And you're not going to have any health care. It's going to the life is headed in a bad spot for you. So the fact that he's like, I'm going to stand up to my mom right now is not necessarily... It doesn't make it go away that she's still going to be concerned for him for the rest of their life. So I don't think there's necessarily – it's not the resolution that I was looking for
yeah.
between these two characters.
I don't think it has to. I don't think that has to be the end-all, be-all right there in that moment. I think we just need to, as the audience, see another moment of 22 acting a certain way with other people. We already got the moment at the barbershop and the barber being like, oh, nobody's – you've never asked me about my life before. Like, this is interesting or whatever. Like, thank you for doing that. And I think this is just Pixar showing one more time of, you know, this isn't Joe saying these things. This is somebody who understands what it is and is starting to learn what it is to what it means to live. You know what I mean? And I think that we just need that. I don't think it's the most satisfactory way to do it. Like, I see where you're coming from, Nick, but I think it's just to show the audience another little scene of.
Oh, I understand you know, why. I understand yeah. why the scene's in there. It's just, it just read to me a little bit weird because the whole time his mom's been like harping on him, and she's like, you know what, cool, and I'm gonna give you your father's suit, and then she just finished talking about how difficult her life was with this man because he followed his dreams and couldn't provide and had to rely on her to do that, and it's not. Necessarily a negative story, right? She doesn't paint that. She's not like harping on the dad. It was just sorry. I'm getting negative on this. I don't mean to
but
be. It was
yeah,
just,
I mean,
this
I
is
just,
one of those scenes that I'm like, this should be a pivotal scene, and it didn't hit for me, unfortunately.
I also didn't get the sense that the dad made it as big as Joe is getting right here. Like, I don't know that he ever had this big of an opportunity because it seemed like the I keep forgetting this woman's name,
Dorothea
character, like. Was a huge deal, right?
In the jazz world, yeah. I mean, apparently yeah. she's this being a part of this quartet is what Joe sees as starting him on the career to the big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we've waxed on this enough. She gives him his dad's suit, and it is a dope suit, and he looks really, really good in it. Except I will say this. I don't think the hat goes with that suit, unfortunately. Because the hat's like a tinge of like gray and brown, and I'm like, I think you need a
everything
blue
else
hat.
Is blue and black, yeah.
100%.
A little bit weird to me.
100%.
But they head to the half note, and 22 tells Joe that he's like, you know, you should think about calling Lisa once again. And Joe's like, listen, I got to focus on this. And this is another one of those hints that Joe could have a little bit more balance in his life and probably be a little bit more better off. 22 watches all the people in New York and living their lives, and she sees the leaves falling from the tree and catches one in her hand. And she's like, oh, no, I think I want to live. She's like, I've always said it was dumb, but the truth is I've always worried there's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm not good enough for living. But then you showed me about purpose and passion. And then Moonwind comes up, and he's like, it's time to reunite. And she's like, oh, you know what? I don't. I want to stay here for a few more minutes and maybe potentially find my spark. And Joe's like, no, we got to go do this thing right now. You got to go back. And she's like, well, I'm the one with the legs. And then bolts. Terry. Tricks them into falling through the ethereal and Terry catches up with them, tricks them into falling through the ethereal and their souls split once again from their
this
body.
Is one of the ones that I think is the coolest, Andy, where he's in the like the MoMA art exhibit or something with the line work and
Lichtenstein or whatever it was and it was like he becomes the lines.
I love the way he like actually like makes the square and like shoots it out, and then when he starts pulling away he shoots it out again further. It's so cool. What a great animation that was.
Joe and 22 are dropped back into the U seminar and immediately begin arguing. Joe, of course, is mad that 22 didn't help him, and 22 is mad that Joe wouldn't give her just a few more minutes to try and find her spark for life. The argument, of course, is interrupted when Jerry's noticed that 22's finally, her card has finally been filled. And Joe tells the reason, like, she's like, how did that happen? He's like, well, the reason that happens is because you were my body and it was all me. So, you know, get out. She throws the card back in his face and runs off. And now, of course, she can throw it because it's full and it's like an Earth pass. Joe wants to know what 20, he asks one of the Jerry's what 22's purpose was. And Jerry's like, dude, you got it all. Nobody said anything about purpose. The spark is not purpose. The spark's just a spark. Like, you guys are always worried about purpose in life. And he's like, huh? Could you explain that more? And the guys, and Jerry's like, no. And then walks away. Because I'd be right here, I'd be like, wait, I got this whole thing wrong. We got all the time in the world here. Let's sit and talk about this for a solid hour.
Yeah, who knows how, like, card is. It could be, like, milliseconds could be passing by on Earth. Up here, I feel like this is the infinity, like, kind of zone or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
There's, like, we Miller's got plenty planet. Of time up here.
What's the opposite just like of Miller's planet?
Yeah.
Then, of course, Joe starts to question what his spark is. And he's like, I think it's got to be music, right? I'm not quite sure. He takes the card and jumps off to the Earth portal. While 22 wonders about her true purpose as well. Joe runs back to Half Note, but he's too late. Curly tells him that Dorothea has already hired another guy. And he's like, you know what? Don't even worry about it. He barges straight into Dorothea in her dressing room and says, if you don't go with me, you'll make the biggest mistake of your career. My only purpose on this planet is to play. It's what I was meant to do. And nothing is going to stop me. So Dorothea, of course, impressed by his bravado, says, gives him one more shot. She says, get ready, Joe Gardner. Your life is about to start. And they hit the stage, and we get an awesome montage the whole night. And this is where I was thinking, okay, here's where it's going to be, right? Here's where he's going to start. I forgot who mentioned it, but he's going to start playing piano, and he's like, oh, no, I'm all cat paws. I don't know what to do here. But no, he crushes it. And his mom and all of her friends are there, and they're very, very supportive. And it seems like everything goes really, really well. And then at the end of it all, the crowd goes wild, and Dorothea says, welcome to the quartet, teach. And it's cool. So at the end of the night, Joe puts his mom and all of her friends in a cab, and she's super proud of him. And Dorothea tells him that the show was killer, and he asks, well, what's next? And she goes, what do you mean, what's next? We come back tomorrow night and do it again. But something, of course, is off. And he says, I've been waiting on this day my entire life. I thought I'd feel different. And Dorothea tells him a story about a fish looking for the ocean. He says, a young fish goes to an older fish and says, where's the ocean? And the older fish says, that's what you're in right now. And the younger fish says, this is water. What I want is the ocean. And then Joe's like, what? I'm not quite sure. I'm guessing what you're talking about.
I do think there's a disconnect in this conversation. Because I associated his feeling of something lacking was with what I said earlier, where he's taken away from 22. And I do kind of feel like, Nick, she thought the conversation was going in the sense of like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was.
I mean, the meaning I derived from this was that your life is not, like, if you spend your life looking for this great grand thing, you're going to miss the reality of your life, which is that it just is all these little moments stacked up together, right? I mean, this is one of those moments where I'm like, I wish, like, I'm confused by what we're supposed to learn from the message of this film. And I know, because I've obviously written the synopsis for it and you guys already have a good perspective on it, that really the message is, like, you have to have balance in life, right? You have to live your life. And to Andy's point earlier, the grind culture and just kind of being so totally focused on one thing that everything else in your life suffers is not the right way. And it's going to end up ultimately leading you to be either unhappy or full of anxiety or obsessed to the point where you're just like, you're no longer really living at all. And that's kind of what I got from this. But I mean, that's kind of what I'm assuming I'm supposed to get from this. I just don't think it was as clear cut and impactful as I wanted it to be at this moment.
I mean, I think the scene is important. And I think the following scene is even more important to drive that point home, because it shows him as downtrodden and as bummed out on that subway, on that ride home, to kind of mirror that earlier scene, what happened when he talks about, yeah, the subway fucking sucks. It's just people. It's the monotony of living. It's the 9 to 5. It's not, you know, this thing isn't cool. Don't think this thing is cool. And then after he has that conversation with Dorothea. I just loved having that sort of that mirrored visual of, I'm back in this subway on the way home, and I don't feel like I thought my purpose was to be a musician, and I didn't quite get what I wanted out of it. I just relate to that. I just felt like it was a really cool scene, and I think having that subway sequence afterwards just sort of further drove that point home of like, what you want to be isn't who you are, isn't who you should become. It's hard for me to put this into words. It's fucking good.
I mean, it is, because but it also goes against sort of like, I guess my reaction to it is it goes against sort of the general concept of what most films have had messaging wise up until this point, which is like, follow your dreams, right? And this one has a message of sort of like, follow your dreams, but also like, don't forget to live your life. And yeah. I'm not sure that Joe would have gotten to this point where he gets this opportunity if he hadn't made all the choices that he'd made up until this point. So this is why it gets muddled for me, right? Because I'm like, I totally agree with what Andy just said. And as a person who, obviously, we work our asses off, like, this hits close to home for me because I have a hard time shutting it off and I have a hard time with work-life balance. I do, right? Like, you guys know the job that we do here can be 24/7. It really can. So at a certain point, you have to force yourself to walk out into the world and see all that stuff. So I 100% agree with that message. But also, like, Joe finally gets a little bit of his dream and his passion, and we're told that's kind of wrong in this. I don't know. I'm just kind of confused by the message.
I feel like for me, he was confused about why he felt bad until he, like, pulls all the shit out of his pockets, starts playing, and realizes...
He compartmentalizes everything in front of his face.
Yeah. Right, and then he's like, oh, shit. I took away her chance at life, her chance of like achieving stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, I think he fully goes back thinking he's going to die. Like when he goes back into the ethereal world.
Well, definitely, like, because he wants to give her the card back, right? That's the
right.
whole point.
So like that's like, I think that's what was making him feel bad. It wasn't necessarily, and Darthea didn't have the context of the movie to be like, oh, you've stolen this girl's this life.
No, I mean, you know Dorothea's what I mean? Point. Dorothea's point was this thing that was supposed to be very, very important to you. Sometimes it's just not, it's not that important. Like you've built this thing up in your brain to
don't
be
lose the
ocean,
forest or the trees.
And in reality,
yeah.
Guess what, dude? We're just in water every night. Like this is life, which is kind of a depressing thing to say to someone who just achieved their goal, right?
Yeah, but again, I don't think
she doesn't know about the souls and shit.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I like he was upset about something that he hadn't figured out exactly what he was upset about.
Yeah.
He talks to her. She has no context of it. So she gives him advice
she does have context because he says, I spent my entire life dreaming about this one moment. And
yeah,
she
you're right.
basically tells him like, hey, buddy, guess what? It sucks.
Yeah,
life sucks.
Like, I don't know. I'm convinced that it's that he's guilty about this thing. And the
I'd like to think had none of the events happened of him falling down the sewer and dying and going through everything, that he likely may have felt a bit happier if he had never met 22 or anything like that. And he finally achieves this goal and he does a thing and he's like, cool, great. Let me keep going with what I'm doing right now. But I think he has a bit more perspective now. And it's like,
it's a recontextualization.
I thought this was what I wanted, and I thought I was searching for something, but really I've had it this whole time.
I think you're absolutely correct, and that's not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is that Dorothea doesn't know any of this, and she's the person telling the audience what the theme of the movie is. And the theme is, if you're out there looking for an ocean, you're just in water. So that to me is the one line where I'm like, that is a really weird thing to have a character who is like the soothsayer sort of say to the other character of like, here's the lesson you're supposed to be learning from this, is that if you're out there looking for a great big ocean, you're just in water, bro.
I think that's why this
isn't a kid's movie.
Yeah,
it's definitely not a kid's movie for sure.
I agree that that definitely muddles the message, or at least the message that I got out of the movie.
Yeah. It's very weird. It was. Yeah. It's one of those things where like, I don't know. I wish that had been phrased differently, but
she could have just like swiped the line from Ferris Bueller, and it would have been more poignant. I think
that's probably what I would have wanted her to say. Right? I would have wanted her to be like, Joe, the reason why you're not enjoying this moment so hard is because you've shoved everything aside and you have no one to celebrate it with, or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
Like you need to, like you, in order to have these moments, you have to have other things in your life to really help put that in perspective. Which I wish that was the message. But to me, when I read that quote over and over again, and I mean, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like a really fucked up thing to say to someone who just got the gig of their life. I digress.
You're totally right about that. But I do wish she had just turned into a Jerry, looked at him and been like, yeah, I guess it wasn't worth taking.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Life, you know?
That's what I thought. Like, yeah. You know, so again, Joe's story and his journey with 22, I think, is very well crafted. And we'll get to that. Let's move on to that because I like how this movie ends, except, kind of. He comes home to an empty house. Where he rides the subway home, sees everyone, you know, and then takes a hard look around him at everyone and himself. Comes home to an empty house and sits at his piano, setting all of 22's knickknacks that she's collected along the road on the end table beside him. And then he thinks back to his adventures with her, with the Lost Soul, and lines up all the items on the piano right in front of him where he put the music that she's collected on the way, including the pizza crust, a half-eaten bagel, a lollipop from the barbershop, which you have to imagine was sticky at this point.
Lollipop grossed me out so much.
So much.
Because he, like, touches it, too, where it's like, come on, your hand's going to be sticky.
Dude, come on. I mean, it was him, and he was, like, licking it, so it's his spit, but it kind of feels like
something
else.
No, but anyway. The pocket lint and all that.
It's
wool. They made that very clear.
Oh, and inside the pocket, Kevin, you put your hand in the pocket. You're like,
so sticky.
Never getting that sticky out of there. I have to burn this suit now. Mm-hmm. We see Connie's trombone solo. As he starts looking through all these things, he remembers the moments of the barbershop and then the thread his mom used to tailor the suit to his body. And then, of course, Connie's trombone solo and his father and mother. And then the first his first day teaching and all of his life experiences, including the first time he remembered seeing jazz with his dad. And then he remembers the conversation he had with 22, where she says, maybe skywatching could be my purpose, or walking. And then he says, those really aren't purposes, 22. That's just regular old living. And he starts realizing, holy crap, I've been wrong about my life, about how I've been going about living my life this entire time. I should have been enjoying every moment of it. So he starts playing the piano, and then he soon enters the zone and finds Moonwind immediately, who spots him. And together, he's like, I need to find 22. He's like, oh, she's become a lost soul. So they go and find her, and they try to tether her. But they can't, and she ends up dragging Moon down with the thing. And we get a great comic beat where he goes down with the ship. He goes, Captain has to go down with the ship. Boom. And then it cuts to the corner. He's like, ah, it just like drops the sign because he can't keep doing it. Of course, 22 can become a lost soul now because she has lived a little bit, which I think is a cool little detail they threw in there. Joe tries to give her card back, but she bolts. He chases after her back into the U seminar where the Jerrys try to calm her. And Joe tells her he was wrong. He says, you are ready to live, 22. But then she engulfs him. And we finally see, and we start to hear the hurricane of her self-doubt. And
you also get the really great part where one of the Jerrys is giving the other one an award. It was like, here's the award that you asked for. Yeah. Which I also really liked.
Jerry giving Terry the award. And then as soon as 22 comes in, he takes it back. He's like, well, I'll have that back.
I love that. We hear all of her self-doubt and all the quotes that have been said to her. We just need to fill out that last box. You will never find your spark. You only got that badge because you were in my body. You have no purpose. He sees himself telling her that she has no purpose and he can't break through to her. So instead, he takes her hand and places that flower petal that he found in it, or she found in it. And they're transported back to that moment by the stoop. And he tells her, you are ready to come live. And she says, I'm scared. I'm not good enough. I never got my spark. And he says, your spark isn't your purpose. The last box fills in when you're ready to live. And the thing is, you're pretty great at jazzing, which I liked. And then 22's soul, all that sort of melts away. And then she just comes back to where she is. And Joe gives her her card back. And she says, but Joe, this means you won't be able to live. And he says, it's okay. I already did. Now it's your time.
All the visuals, by the way, in all of this are fucking fantastic. When we are dealing with 22 as the lost soul and seeing the way it looks inside and all the sort of movement around it, and then that sort of black sand taking the form of like Abraham Lincoln and all that shit was just so artistically well done and so cool conceptually as well.
The part where she's like, are you sure you're okay being on the penny? He's like, of course, it's an honor to be on the penny. She's like, well, Jackson's on 20. He's like, what?
That's good.
Joe tells her, 20, let's see, it's okay. He says, it's okay. Now it's your turn. So Joe tells 22 he'll go with her, even though she's like, well, you can't go all the way. He goes, well, I'll go as far as I can. And they hold hands and take the jump together toward Earth as 22's card pulls her toward the mortal realm. And he lets go of her hand and smiles.
Pixar is just so good at what they do. When he says, I'll go as far as I can.
Yeah.
It's just like there couldn't be a better line for that moment. Ugh. Beautiful.
Joe finds himself back on the road to heaven, but Jerry tells them, he's like, listen, man, it's not too often that someone comes here and inspires us, and you worked with 22 and really found her reason for living. So we're going to give you another shot. And he's like, well, what about Terry? And he's like, don't worry about Terry. We got her. We got a plan for that. And the plan is just to distract Terry and put one of the other little things over there. And I thought that was really, really funny. I was like, hey, simple solution for a complex problem. And then Jerry says, how are you going to spend your life? And back on Earth, we see Joe step out of his front door and take a big, deep breath. And he says, I don't know, but I do know I'm going to live every minute of it. And that is Soul.
Amazing. So wait, what's like the final shot? I'm trying to think what the final shot of the movie is.
It's him walking out of his tube, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going, that's right. That's right.
Just kind of breathing
in that air. Yeah. Oof. Yeah, I had a good cry. I had a real good cry. And I just sat there like, damn, I got a review show in 15 minutes. Jesus Christ.
Pulling syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny and back us on the haiku tier, which Joey is. Which tier? I can't remember. It's one of the tiers. Of course, you get to write into the show, ask us questions, be a part of the post show, things like that. I hope there's a haiku tier. If not, Joey, pitch that to Tim for January.
A general like participation tier.
Perfect. Let's see. Andrew Feisner writes in. It says, purpose and meaning, the things we are all needing, we are all feeling. For if we don't know, we are lost, nowhere to go. Swept up in the flow, there's more than a spark to fill the void in our heart. It's waiting for you. Life is worth living. Even without your thing, there's something to bring. And you have a purpose, and it's waiting for you. Now, end long haiku.
Very good.
That's a great way to
Very
end.
Good.
Let's see. Oh, there you go. Thank you. This is Soul Haiku in Review. This is from Joe Merton. It says, abstract yet moving, thanks to Trent and Atticus, this film went places.
Music is really good. No, that's right.
Okay, perfect.
I had no idea, by the way. Like, I don't know anything about Nine Inch Nails other than their name and their existence. Mm-hmm. So I was very surprised. What my impression of Nine Inch Nails was not the music we got out of this. And I was, like, really impressed.
Joy, have you never seen Social Network?
I have, but I've seen it, like, twice, 10 years ago.
Have you ever seen Seven?
Very no. I don't think I've ever seen Seven.
What, did they do the soundtrack for Seven?
They did the soundtrack.
I think.
Oh,
was
no,
like
I have seen Seven. What's in the box?
It's either Seven or maybe The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. One of them starts the Nine Inch Nails song. And Andy, I was trying to draw a funny reference between an obviously like animated kids movie with a lot of heart that has a lot there for adults with a fucked up psycho killer movie.
I thought
like Seven.
You were going to go with the striptease scene at the end of Magic Mike 2 because they play, I want to fuck you like an animal. They play that song.
Is that Nine Inch Nails?
That's Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, okay. Then I was kind of on that thing. On the
Grant Burton writes in for this Soul Haiku. It says, Soul is quite a lark. It has the Pixar hallmark. What is your life spark?
Wow. That's really good.
That was good.
That's
Andy,
a good one.
Hit me with some of that Ragu Bagu.
Do 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 do
Ragu.
Do 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 do
Make a Bagu. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Right Guys Talk Bad Guys here for Pixar. Boy, if we got a long, long old list. I don't know. This is another one of those where it's like, is there an antagonist? I guess Terry would be the antagonist.
Yeah.
And maybe
Terry's doing her job.
Your
though.
Dreams like, are the yeah, maybe. Like,
Joe's kind of his own worst enemy in this, dreams. Right? For like putting everything aside and like
I guess. Again, you guys are gonna have to vote on this. I'm confused at what the overall message of this movie
manhole
is.
Covers.
Manhole covers.
Manhole covers. Yeah,
uncovered.
So we're gonna put those,
a lot of people die that way, Andy.
We're gonna put manhole covers right
there. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like.
But like, it's how far are they falling down, though?
It could be like 20 feet, especially in New York. Yeah. Because then they have, you know, the two doors that open like that?
Oh. You see I'm always just thinking it is Ninja Turtles and you're falling. It's like a 7-foot fall.
No, I think minimum talking about 10 feet.
You might tear a tendon in your leg. Yeah.
You got to think about the rats, Andy. Once you get down there, you break a leg. You can't call Ray. The rats are the size of cats. They kill you and eat you.
That's true. Also, all the pink slime, the pink goo.
Oof, a lot of pink
Ghostbusters
goo.
Ghostbusters too.
And Ghostbusters 2016. Other goo. it's time to rank it. In every crack.
Did we rank the bad guy?
I put him at number 9. I put manhole covers at 24. Number 24.
Perfect.
I don't think that's right. I think it definitely ranks higher than the bottom two, which are not applicable.
Now, this one has an asterisk too, because I feel like this is, again, this is one of those movies that's really, really hard to like break down because it's very, very complex. And at the end of the day, like, I think I could argue that Joe is his worst enemy. I would argue that, right?
Yeah, Joe is the problem here. I think Joe and the pursuit of the dream gets in the way of actually being happy.
But I still think that he accomplishes his dream by the end of this. And like, that's not necessarily the end all be all thing where Terry is literally killing him. Literally gets his soul and pulls it out of the body.
Look, Terry's doing his job. Like, I mean,
Terry's just an accountant, man.
Joe's the one who fell through a fucking manhole cover, you know?
That's what I'm saying. At the end of the day, it's either Joe and his lack of looking down when he walks or manhole covers. Done. 24. All right, let's rank this bad boy.
Can we judge for a second before I move on some of the stuff that Tim has on this Ragu Bagu list now that I have it in front of me? The Baraktua Dinpo Suar, like, there's the spelling on this.
Oh, really?
Joey, that's for Tim's eyes. All right, just be blessed that you get to see these lists.
Tim his brain is a living nightmare. I don't understand it. I'll read Tim's actually because he put his ranking there as we rank this. But let's get into the rankings right now. Right now on the list, audio listeners, you've got number one, Coco, number two, Up, number three, Monsters, Inc., number four, Finding Nemo, number five, Incredibles 2, number six, Incredibles, number seven, Wall-E, number eight, Toy Story 3, number nine, Inside Out, number 10, Toy Story 2, number 11, Toy Story 4, number 12, Toy Story, number 13, Luca, 14, Ratatouille, number 15, Onward, 16 is Finding Dory, 17 is Monsters University, 18 is Cars, 19 is A Bug's Life, 20 is Cars 3, 21 is Good Dinosaur, 22 Brave, and rounding out the list is Cars 2.
Nick, will you ever say Ratatouille?
I tried to say it as best as possible.
Ratatouille.
But I got to the second T and I was like, I can't let Kevin win. So I put a tat on it. I put a ratatouille.
I don't know why. I like the way you say it, Nick. Ratatouille. I say you know that what? Way I'm, too.
Kevin, I'd like to issue an apology for you.
Thank
Andy,
you.
It's called Ratatouille.
Ratatouille.
Where do we want to rank this movie? Who wants to start the bidding?
I'll start off. I'm having some trouble between either 8 or 9 on this. Wow. I don't know whether this is above Toy Story 3 for me or below it. Wow. I'm going to go with above Toy Story 3. I think that this movie achieves so much in the fact that it is not doing a whole lot of silly comedy. The fact that there aren't two characters that are their sole purpose is to be hilarious with each other while trying to overcome something. Like the fact that this movie is kind of dark and really makes you think how you've lived your life, and it is still up there for me as a Pixar movie. I think it's pretty wild. So I will put this at number 8.
Oh no, go ahead, Kev.
I was just like, I'm a little bit. I thought you'd put a little bit higher.
Well, I would, but I can't put it over Wall-E. I'm at that point where I'm like,
no,
I don't
you have to like, you have to let go of that. You have to let go of
no,
that. Like, that's
I can't.
Thing. You have to.
Can't.
I'll be I'm with you. We'll
Andy.
Do it together.
How is Finding Nemo 4? Jesus.
That's the thing.
What are we doing here?
I would put this above Finding Nemo. And Monsters, Inc., like, to me, it could be interchanged with Monsters, Inc., no problem. But for now, I'm going to say number 4. I know that's going to be the highest, and then you all suck, and I hate you all. Mm.
Joey.
I feel like I've said between Nick and I that I'm way close to Nick on this. I don't love this movie. I think that it gets real murky in what the actual message is. I would probably put this in number 20.
Above Cars 3?
Yeah, under Bug's Life.
Mm. I would probably put it a touch higher than that, just because I do think that it's dealing with a lot of complex stuff, but no. Oh, yeah, I'd put it you put it above A Bug's Life, sorry, or below A Bug's Life?
Below A Bug's Life.
I'd put it above A Bug's Life.
Oh, this is underneath Finding Dory? What the fuck is wrong with this place? Holy shit. Holy God. Tim, yeah. Save us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I guess it's a wild card. Yeah. Tim's probably
wild card right now. Tim says, I would put Soul at number 12, above Luca. Ooh. And below Toy Story. Honestly, this is mostly because I think the Toy Stories are way too low on. All right, Tim, come on. We understand things got to get moved around the list, but this is the way the cookie crumbles.
You shouldn't be talking about Toy Stories. I've got some strong stances on my vote.
Way
not
too
being
low on the list.
It.
We all have strong ones. Tim, I mean, Kevin, I'm right with you. Tim, don't open up a can of worms unless you want to make worm soup. This is too long a list, and while I think this is better than most movies above the trilogy plus one on the rankings, I do think its whole is greater than all of its individual parts, and some of those parts don't hit quite right. I don't love 22. I don't dislike her at all. I might want to make sure I read that right, but I do think it's better is better than most of the movies above the list on the rankings. I do think it's whole. Okay, so he does think the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. I don't love 22. I don't dislike her at all, really. But for how main a character she is, I wish I loved her throughout the whole movie as much as I did by the end. At the end of the day, though, this movie is truly special because it feels like a new Pixar format, which we haven't seen before. And the design, language, and different worlds is 10 out of 10 unrivaled Pixar. So I will vote as Tim right now. But I think this is going to be at number 12, right? That's how it's going to add up.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So we don't have to do that.
I can't believe we're putting this above Ratatouille. You guys are crazy.
Well, Joey, probably because nobody knows how to pronounce it.
Ratatouille.
I'm not mad at it, but I do think it should have been lower. But I understand why you guys want to make it higher, and I get it. So the new rankings are as follows. Coco, number one. Number two, Up. Number three, Monsters, Inc. Number four, Finding Nemo. Number five, Incredibles 2. Number six, Incredibles. Number seven, Wall-E. Number eight, Toy Story 3. Number nine, Inside Out. Number 10, Toy Story 2. Number 11, Toy Story 4. And rounding out 12 is Soul.
Available online.
Next week, of course.
I would like to change my vote. I'd like to put Wall-E at number 24, just
to make it mad. Anyone can work like that, Joey.
Anyone can cook.
Anyone can cook. We have... Is that it? That's 24, right? Is that
24?
We did them.
Very, very cool. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, we do this show every week, twice a week, actually. And this wraps up Pixar in Review for now, but we are going to do Scream coming up. And what was the other one we're going to do, Joe? We are going to do...
Two Screams next week, right?
We got two Screams next week. Oh, Scream that's three. Awesome.
Very excited.
And we're very, very excited. Oh, that's super cool. I've been enjoying the Scream series. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to write into our shows, make sure you go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny and back us over there with a couple of your hard-earned dollars. We really appreciate it, and it gets you exclusive access to our post-show content and ad-free content, and some of it might even be a little bit early. But we love you guys very, very much. If you got no bucks to give, please make sure you subscribe over on youtube.com/kindoffunny, where we put all this content for free. Until next time, we love you very much. Just keep swimming.
Anyone can cook.